listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live, live, live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, January 29th. My name is Michael Kelly. I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Oh, good evening, Michael. You know, as always, I'm happy to be here and especially happy tonight to talk to Dr. Mike.
It's going to be a good one, and as always, I'm happy to have you with me. Couldn't do it without you. So happy to see everybody in chat as well. It is going to be a great discussion tonight. Can't wait to get into it. And I always want to thank people that join us from the archives as well. We are international, so time zones are a thing. But if you do listen to this and you have the chance, we'd love to have you join us in the chat. There's just such a dynamic quality to it. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. Now, as always, we're going to begin with our 9 abbreviated principles and belief. Those are 1, do no harm, do right. 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4, we are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. Tonight, we do have a special guest. Welcome, Dr. Mike Tischner.
Hello, everyone.
Oh, I'm so glad to have you here, Dr. Mike. You know, for those who don't know Dr. Mike, he has an extensive background, a full career, specifically studying sharks, might add, so in marine studies, but boy, he's been around the UFO community. You've been around, so it's just always great to have you here, Mike.
Well, thank you. When you get to a certain age, you can say you've done a lot of things.
I know. These little chapters of life.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to start out tonight, if you don't mind, because you're the ocean guy. How do you feel the oceans and ocean life is being affected by, you know, climate change? And I know there's a lot of debate about what people call it, but me, the facts are the facts. The Earth has tilted a little on its axis. It's now, you know, the North Pole or, you know, magnetic North Poles in Siberia. The jet streams have changed. The water is rising. So how do you feel, I guess, what's your sense or what's your knowledge of how this is changing marine life?
Well, you have basically, when ocean temperatures rise, a lot of the organisms, especially reefs, can't tolerate the increase in temperature. I mean, I raise fish, and there are some fish that if you actually go in and change the temperature in the tank by 2 or 3 degrees, they'll die.
Wow.
So the same thing is in the ocean. I mean, you take a lot of reefs, the biggest reef, you know, in Australia, a lot of it is died. I mean, you go down and you see it's just all white. Mm. It's bleached. I have pictures of for example, you're going to Cozumel, you know, 30 years ago, and compare it to a picture of nowadays, and it's a big difference. There's less fish. It's really affecting everything in the Gulf. I'll call it Gulf of Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're not going to laugh.
Okay. but there's a place that's about 100 miles off the coast of Texas. It's called the Flower Gardens, and it's a marine sanctuary. And it used to be very, 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 you know, lots of fish, lots of different things. It was fairly deep diving. You're talking 900 feet or so, but that's changed a lot. And a lot of the reefs that I've been on in the Caribbean and so forth like that, even off the coast of Florida, you can take a look at something 30 years ago and look at it now, and you'll see a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, part of it has to do with invasive species. For example, Florida now has a huge problem with lionfish. Mm-hmm. And they don't really have a natural predator, so they eat anything. That's why they have giant competitions every year on people to go out and spearfish lionfish. And by the way, they taste good.
So this has changed the migration patterns, too.
Yeah.
Mm. You know,
yeah, I'll give you an example of that. Whale sharks, there's a place just right off of Cancun, actually Isla Mujeres, which is an island right there. It's called the Florin. And it, at one time, well, just a matter of 3 or 4 years ago when I was there, at any given time, you had hundreds of whale sharks. And I understand from a person that was there this year, they went out and they saw 8 the entire day. So they're migrating somewhere else. Now, is that because of, increase in temperature, or, you know, it's probably more has to do with its food source, which is, you know, microorganisms and plankton and things like that. But I've seen it change over the years from several different places. So I think it's affecting a lot of critters.
Well, I know that I've been reading that some of the larger fish, whether it's sharks or whales, have also changed, like their sightings where there weren't sightings before.
Yeah, that's very true. How about 8 years ago, actually 10 years ago, I went up, I did a trip up through Mexico, and we, you know, through the Cintos and up to a little island called Hobox. And that's where all the whale sharks used to congregate. Well, in that period of time, it moved from there down into the Caribbean, down by Cancun. Not sure why, but they just migrated elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you do have a lot of these larger species, you know, migrate, and they're not global. They're not global communities. They're pretty well localized, and that's based on a lot of the genetic studies that have been done. Basically, they're pretty well localized. They have a area that they stay in. Every once in a while, for whatever reason, they just move.
Well, we do have a couple of questions in the chat, if I can move this, because if the chat goes fast, I'm going to lose them. question from Wendy. She recently heard that sharks cannot contract any kind of disease. Is that true?
That's false.
Okay.
They can, but it's, you're referring to actual cancer type stuff.
Mm.
And they're very, very resistant to that. But they can get disease and they, you know, so forth like that. It's not very often.
Yeah.
But, you know, for example, something that, it's not really a disease, they don't know, but a lot of these whale beachings, like the pilot whales and things like that, that beach yeah. themselves, a lot of that has to do, I think, with pollution.
Mm.
And I think it's noise pollution.
Yeah, that's interesting. Right.
And there has been some studies. I mean, the Navy is notorious for using different sonars. They're mm-hmm. not allowed to have a sonar above a certain decibel level, but occasionally it happens. And, you know, there's just a lot going on.
What about ocean drilling and stuff? Does that affect the sound of the water?
I don't think it affects that. I think if it leaks, it certainly does.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that to me is the more important issue is pollution.
Well, I mean, look at the Deepwater Horizon event and how that changed the Gulf. For, I mean, how Still long have. Do you think the repercussions of that are going to last?
Still going on.
Absolutely. I mean, we're looking at decades, a century or more. You know, I'm so glad that you brought up that, you know, we're dealing with climate change, and the changing temperatures, changing climate. You brought up food sources and other things like that, too, the size of fish. What got me into this was about maybe 10 years ago, there was a Time article showing photos of fish caught at a Florida pier 100 years ago and 50 years ago and 10 years ago, and all the fish are getting smaller and smaller.
Oh, yeah.
And they just don't have the time to grow. Overfishing has been a good
example of that is the tuna.
Mm.
Oh.
You know, if you look at pictures of them, or the boats going out doing tuna fishing, say 50, 75 years ago, they were hauling in, you know, hundreds of pounds on each one of them. And I mean, there's one after another. And nowadays, they're lucky to reach almost, you know, 100 pounds. And the big problem is that until they quit subsidizing fishery industry and you have these floating cities that go out and just pillage the ocean, a lot of things aren't going to change.
Yeah.
I mean, if they would quit subsidizing all that crap, fish prices would go up because it would revert back to local fishermen. And, it would cost more. Well, in my opinion, that's too bad.
Save the ocean.
You know, it's kind of like at some point in time, it's not going to be, self-sufficient, basically.
Right.
A good example of that is that over the last, I think it was 25 or 30 years, 90% of shark species have been decimated.
No.
Nope. Yep. It's true.
Wow.
And right now, the biggest thing with sharks are shark finning, and I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And there are places that tout, well, we're friendly to this. Well, that's horseshit, basically. Sorry about that. But Puerto Rico is notorious for that.
I did not.
That's why I will not set foot in Puerto Rico.
Hmm.
I thought that was more out of Asia with
that's
the
what
finning.
I thought.
No, it's all over. Puerto Rico is they hide it, and there's been a lot of studies done on that, and it's all kickback money, you know, and so forth. But yeah, Asia is notorious for that.
Wow.
And they go in, and the idea of shark fin, first of all, it's cartilage.
Yep.
Cartilage has absolutely no nutritional value whatsoever.
Is it supposed to be medicinal?
Well, yeah, that's one thing. Medicinal and aphrodisiac. But, you know, whatever. The biggest problem you have right now with sharks is their high mercury content.
Oh, no.
They're one of the highest levels of mercury are in sharks.
And I imagine that's because they're one of the apex predators that eats everything else around.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
It's really sad what's happening, actually.
You know.
Well, I was going to say, speaking of extinct, I know you know a little bit about this. I read that the Megalodon is extinct. Is that true? Because there are other stories that say
yeah, there's... it's kind of one of those things where some people say there are, but there's no scientific evidence that they do. You know, give you an idea about Megalodon. I remember some of these things. They're like 50. They were 50 to 60 feet long. And they weighed, you know, 7,500 tons. And their teeth, they have found triangular teeth up to 7 inches.
Wow. That's
and I have a few that are 4 inch. But they look like a bulkier version of the modern great white shark. And they also, some people think that they're more related to mako sharks and sand tiger sharks than white sharks. And they, what, they lived 23 to 3.6 million years ago, something like that.
Well, the story is that they're really deep in the ocean, and is that possible?
Oh, because, it's, yeah, well, I mean, take into consideration only about 10% of the ocean has been explored.
Right. Yeah. Do we know what their diet was?
There'd be lots of things out there, including aliens.
True enough.
Ooh. You know, well, we'll save that for later in the show.
Yeah. Although that is a perfect segue, but yeah.
But, yeah, you know, they probably dropped off in part population because of the primary food, lack of primary food source.
What was their food source, do we know?
Big fish. Big dinosaurs.
I was wondering if it was going to be the giant squid.
Well, out there were there, I'm sure. But to give you an idea, the larger, the ones that are 50, 60 feet long, they open up their mouth as far as 10 feet wide. And they are estimated to have the biggest bite force of around 40,000 pounds per square inch.
Oof. Massive.
Which means they can pretty well bite through anything.
Yeah. Well, that's why the movies are so popular.
Yeah, well. And the kind of the big thing about are they alive? Well, no scientific evidence to exist today. Its extinction is well supported by fossil record and the lack of sightings of anything.
Even like a body, coming to the surface, yeah. I would think,
Well, it's like the coelacanth. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not. The coelacanth was thought to be extinct. And, several years, 50 years ago or something like that, actually one was caught. They've caught several of them, and they were supposed to have been extinct for 6 or 7 million years.
Wow. So we don't know.
Yeah, I mean, how do you say they don't exist? Well, to me, the lack of any kind of evidence of you know,
that we know of.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And the other problem you have is sharks do not have bones; they're cartilaginous.
Mm, yeah.
So when they die, cartilage dissolves.
Wow.
And the only thing left are teeth.
Well, that makes sense.
You know, listening to this and thinking about it, I'm thinking of the vastness of the ocean. And, you know, we've talked about Bigfoot and Sasquatch and things like that and how they can hide in the Pacific Northwest. The ocean is just dwarfs that. It's like comparing the Earth to the Sun or something like that. You know, there's just so much ocean, so much unknown area that, yeah, we really don't know a lot. So I'll keep my mind open. But
yeah, no, they know more about, you know, Moon, Mars than they do about the ocean.
Mm. So,
and
before
they don't
know
that much about the moon either.
That's true. Mm. The dark side of the moon.
Well, it's actually not dark, but you know.
Yeah,
yeah, I know.
It's the far side, which you know, there is that solar probe that's between the Earth and the Sun that does take some nice pictures of that, though.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know,
so before we lose this in the scroll too, because I want to talk about this also, is Damien's asked, what about that whale that's carrying around her dead child? It's so sad.
Mm. Oh,
well, that's
yeah.
J35. That's an orca. And to give it a little background, because I've been paying attention to this, in 2018 she lost a baby and carried that around on her nose for 17 mm-hmm. days. The last report was January 16th that I could find, and she still had her baby, and that would be 15 days.
It lasted for 17 days.
Mm-hmm.
Again,
over 1,000 miles.
Wow. See, that really, I mean, this is where I can't believe that people would think animals and even fish are not sentient beings.
Well, they are.
Yeah.
They're extremely intelligent.
I mean, whales, orcas, of course, being mammals, do you think there's a sentient fish, like a shark or anything like that? Or are we, I mean, I've always believed that orcas are self-aware and sentient, just like us. I mean, their behaviors, their language, the way they behave in captivity, which is a whole other discussion.
You do realize that an orca is the largest dolphin.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So dolphins in general are extremely social. Mm. And they're extremely intelligent.
You know,
but isn't J35 the first one to be documented as grieving over a baby?
You know, I'm not real sure about that, but I believe so.
How long ago was that?
There's actually been reports of orcas carrying a salmon on their nose.
Fashion statement.
You know, it's kind of, they think that they're playing with them, you know, whatever. They're not real sure. It's just like J35, that behavior is thought to be, you know, a form of mourning.
Mm-hmm.
How long ago was J35? I wasn't really familiar with this.
2018.
Okay. I remember, and this is very vague, I apologize, it was a documentary I saw back in the 2000s about, you know, SeaWorld and orcas and how they really shouldn't be kept in captivity. There was a story that they related, and I'm going to get the details wrong, but I encourage you to check into it, everybody, that there was a female orca that had a calf in captivity. They took the calf away, and it would basically call to the calf repeatedly over and over and over again, wouldn't stop, trying to get it, mm-hmm. you know, get its back, get it attention, things like that, which, you know, I think definitely shows mourning, a sense of loss.
Oh, absolutely. And speaking of SeaWorld, a lot of my experience with orcas was in San Diego SeaWorld. And there, my very good friend, he started off as feeding the fish, basically. And after so many years, he actually wound up being executive vice president of SeaWorld. And he's the one that actually collected all the orcas for SeaWorld. And they, you know, a lot of people think, oh, they're mistreated. They were not mistreated at all.
No, I wouldn't say mistreated. I guess from my perspective, what I'm thinking is not that they're treated cruelly, just that when you have a certain level of intelligence, you shouldn't be in cat. Like, having a human zoo kind of thing.
And, you know, I agree with a lot of that. And an interesting fact, if you notice, killer whales have a very, very tall dorsal fin. Males can be up to 6 feet tall. Females, they have a natural curve to them. But in captivity, what's interesting is the males will develop a curved dorsal fin.
Huh.
And they're not sure why. Personally, I think it's depression. But, yeah, there's, I mean, studying these critters, I can understand on one hand having them there, because a lot of people get to see things that they never would normally see.
Yeah, that is a good argument.
Like, it's like going to the zoo. Well, you know, nowadays they design, you know, enclosures so they're more like their natural habitat, which 50 years ago, that wasn't the case. Hmm. So things are evolving. I don't think that I don't like the idea personally of keeping large predators like orcas, even dolphin. You know, I just don't like that idea.
Well, you know, if we know that they're a sentient being and they're family based, you know, they're pods.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why would we want to break up a family? But again, science and researchers don't necessarily take that perspective.
Well, that's exactly right.
And things are incremental, because when you said earlier, you know, it brings awareness to these things. Human beings can be dense, maybe. They can be not. Well, they don't really. Go ahead.
I just think they're stupid.
But they don't often think about things that don't affect them. So, you know, maybe seeing them at SeaWorld, I'm not going to say that I agree with it, but in seeing the point, if you see them at SeaWorld, maybe you're more likely to want to preserve their environment in the wild, or, you know, different protections and such. There's one thought that I had earlier, you know, talking about, you know, orcas being a type of dolphin and such, and the intelligence therein. One thing I always remembered finding funny and interesting about dolphins, and probably other species as well, is that they have a cruelty to them that you see when they interact with other animals in the ocean. And it seems to be a little bit indicative of intelligence, I think.
They'll kill a shark.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think the orca itself is an apex predator, isn't it?
They actually ram them in the gills.
Wow.
And that's why you can always, you know, the story is if there's dolphins around, there's not any sharks. Well, that's not exactly true. Mm. But for all practical purposes, dolphins, if there are sharks around, they will ram them and try to kill them.
Mm.
If they feel threatened.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's only 10% of the ocean explored, why aren't scientists exploring it more? Like, what's
money.
The holdup?
Mm. Yeah, it's money.
And yeah, it's tough to build submarines that can go that deep and explore. I mean, costs a lot. And then you have incidents like I can't remember the name of it, the Titanic visit touring sub. You know, you need to make it sure it's done right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was just absolutely, well, it was tragic, but...
stupid?
Pretty stupid. Yeah, a little thunder out there. It's pretty, pretty stupid.
Mm-hmm. So here's my question, though. I understand that you've got to build pressurized vehicles for in the ocean, but we're building pressurized vehicles to travel to space. Now,
they're pressurized in space simply to, you know, keep the air in.
Right. There's no pressure on the hull.
There's no pressure on the hull.
Yeah. Makes me think, and I'm sorry for the pop culture references, there's an episode of Futurama. It's a cartoon show about a futuristic, you know, world, and in it they have a spaceship, and in this episode, the spaceship, you know, is out on the ocean fishing, and then it gets pulled underwater by a fish that gets snagged onto the ship. And as they're going deeper and deeper, one of the persons asks the professor who's in charge, she says, you know, how many, you know, how much pressure can the, how many atmospheres of pressure can the ship take? He says, well, it's a spaceship, so anywhere between zero and one.
Yeah. Well, what, speaking of movies, one of my favorite, I don't know, some of you probably never heard of this, but there's a, used to be a show a long time ago called Sea Hunt.
Mm.
I remember.
Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
And one of the funniest scenes that still stuck with me today is he was on a pier and he had a scuba tank and two guys were coming after him. He turned on the air and blew them into the water. Which, you know, I mean, back then, you're a little kid, you go, wow, that's right. Mm. But, you know, it's, you know, movies are kind of,
you know, yeah. If we're talking about that, I am aware of that Sea Hunt vaguely, although I haven't seen it. I've heard it referenced in pop culture things. But when I was growing up, SeaQuest was one of my favorite shows. Yeah. And looking back on it, I thought it ran for years and years. And I went to rewatch as an adult. It only had three seasons. Blew my mind, but wonderful show.
There's a lot of them that kind of pegged your interest. But Sea Hunt was one of the ones who had a big, big effect on the scuba industry.
So in a good way, or?
Oh, no, I mean, in a good way. I mean, it made it real popular and so forth like that. Of course, I don't know if everybody knows it, but Jacques Cousteau, he's the one that actually came up with the Aqualung.
Mm-hmm.
And, so, you know, stories of Sea Hunt were with Mike Nelson in it. You know, it had a big effect, kind of like Star Trek had a big effect on, you know, basically science.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it has been mentioned, here we go, we're going to take a deep dive. Damien says, aliens live in the ocean. So in your experience, and I'd like you to talk personally from your experience with regard to what you've seen, especially in your UFO studies and your studies of the ocean, do you believe that there is alien life under the water?
I think it's very possible.
Okay.
I mean,
yeah, and they're not UFOs, they're USOs, but
correct. Okay.
Why not? I mean, a lot of times they're spotted coming up out of water, you know, bodies of water. And, you know, it's certainly, you know, the ocean, especially like the Bermuda Triangle, which is kind of a oddity in itself. There are just tons of places where a colony of UFOs could exist and nobody would ever even know it.
Mm.
You know, I remember the theories that aliens had a base on the far side of the moon, but we have probes that can see the far side of the moon. We don't know so much about the deep sea. You're right. It's the perfect place to go if they want to avoid us.
And unfortunately, you'll have people look at something as like pictures from the moon. They have to think, oh, that's a tower. Look at that. That's all sorts of stuff. Well, we haven't been back there in, what, 50 years, 30 years, something like that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of one of the things, is there something up there? Well, maybe. Just like the ocean. Is there something in there?
Yeah.
Well, there's
an Artemis 2 going. Artemis 2 is going relatively soon, isn't it?
Do what?
Artemis 2 is doing its mission to the moon pretty soon, isn't it?
Yeah, it's supposed to, if it ever gets off the launch pad.
Mm. Well, they did Artemis 1. We're getting there.
Yeah. But, well, they have to talk to Elon first.
Let's not.
Yeah.
Well. So I guess my question then is, okay, let's say there are, you know, there's alien life under the ocean. What kind of vessel could withstand that pressure?
Well.
I'm just curious because I'm thinking.
Let me flip it. What kind of vessel could fly, you know, erratically through the atmosphere?
Yeah.
I mean,
the way that they do.
We can get to the bottom of the ocean, but we can't fly like they can.
No, I mean, you know, it defies physics.
Yeah.
Our understanding. Now,
in the
physics,
underwater, yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, who knows? You know, I wish I did. But you know, it's really, you know, to me that's kind of a I can't even really even comprehend.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a vehicle that can go underwater, it can go above water, it can fly at tremendous speeds, do right angle turns, and so forth. Well, how do you explain that? Well, you can't.
And that was, I guess my question is, and maybe there are people who know the answer to this, but
maybe
what kind of outer coating would that be? Would it be something not of Earth, or something
I'm sure
that's under the water that we don't know about?
No, I think it would, if it, you know, thinking about it, if they're extraterrestrial, then it's not of Earth.
So the materials for the ship would be not of our...
Right, exactly.
Kind of
Because
we don't know of anything that can do that.
Or at least how to combine the materials into whatever it would be.
Now, keep in mind, you know, the government's never going to tell you what's going on, okay?
No.
People might as well just accept it. They'll tell you a few things. But they're not going to tell you all the deep secrets because they're military. And it's kind of one of those things where you think you kind of understand some of the stuff they have. Think about 100 years in the future. That's what they're working on now. They're working on stuff that would absolutely blow your mind.
Well, something that I read up on, because this is what I do, not too long ago, is that science has isolated a certain bacteria that can withstand radiation. In other words, it's not affected by radiation, and it's and they call it a Conan the bacterium,
mm-hmm.
and made of. And I wrote this down. It's called Deinococcus radiodurans, manganese ions and phosphate, and with a peptide of amino acids,
mm-hmm.
interesting, protect against radiation. Is this something that, I know it sounds kind of out there like everything else, but isn't that something that could help against space travel?
No, I'm sure it could. I mean, the biggest problem you have out there is radiation.
So, I mean, it's a bacteria, and they mm-hmm. finally figured out what this bacteria is made of.
They have bacteria that they've taken on some of these flights up in space,
mm-hmm.
bring them back, and they're still alive.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the vacuum of space.
Well, this is where I'm fascinated with. You know, one of the reasons we can't go into space is radiation and all, you know, going through the ionosphere. And that's a problem. But again, what we're dealing with on Earth with high levels of radiation, and are there things that we can incorporate with this bacteria, you know, that protects not just space vehicles, but ourselves?
I'm sure they could. That's way beyond my level.
Oh, it's beyond me too. Trust me, like quantum physics, I only can get the concept, but don't ask me how it works.
Got me beyond that.
I know. So
infinitely small is the same as infinitely big is basically my takeaway, but
yeah. Yeah.
You know,
a little more than that, but you know, it's strange, let's put it that way.
You know, just it is on that idea of bacteria. When you figure something out, you know, it is a known quantity, but it is tough to gain new knowledge and to figure out how these things work. How long did it take to get steel and things like that? You know, how many tens of thousands of years? I like to think that, you know, we could develop things in time for interstellar travel, but I have actually recently read some compelling arguments that say, you know, it might not be possible for us. I am not willing to accept them, but they made an interesting case just in the vastness of space, the immense vastness.
I'm more interested in getting something that can go to the depths of the ocean.
We'll get there before we go to space. I mean, before we go interstellar, at least.
Well, more people have set foot on the moon than they have been down to the deepest part of the Mariana Trench.
Yeah. Well, I find, you know, it's also amazing. When you finally retired, not that long ago,
Two years ago.
Yeah. What was your biggest takeaway from all of your years in watching the progress of the sciences that you studied and the people you worked with?
Oh, I feel sorry for the students nowadays.
Oh, do you?
Well, I mean, look at the volume of information that's there. It's just overwhelming. You know, when I was working on my first undergraduate degree, I mean, it was, you know, memorize this, memorize the Darf reaction, memorize the Krebs cycle, memorize this, that, and the other, and so forth. And nowadays, it's probably 100 times more information about those individual things than it was when I was there.
You know, so, I can appreciate that. I was telling somebody the other day that my grandfather became a vet through the mail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, he ordered his leather bag.
Yeah. My daughter is setting for her, she's a veterinary surgeon, and she's setting for her board certification.
Mm.
And one of the exams, they literally have to read, there's probably 1,000 articles. And they're tested over those 1,000 articles.
Wow.
And it's like she studied for it. She has to take the test on the 4th. But, I mean, just the vast amount of information that's there currently, in all honesty, I don't know if I could do it or not.
Mm-hmm. So that being said, do you feel we've made some progress, not just in what we know, but in our understanding?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think a lot of people understand it. However, there are a lot of people that don't.
And we're not being responsible?
Yeah, I mean, well, let's just take the poachers in Africa after elephants.
Oh,
for
what?
Tusks.
Yeah.
The only thing that needs a tusk is an elephant.
Yeah.
You know, and you have all that, you know, there's just sorts of examples of a problem. And there's actually an easy solution to it, but people aren't willing to accept that solution.
What's that?
Oh, you find a poacher, you shoot him.
I'm happy with that solution.
You find a fishing boat that's fishing in illegal waters, capture it, and sink it.
Yeah.
I don't disagree with you, but I do know that there are some programs like the Rhino program. They will dehorn them.
Yeah, that's true.
And so they are trying to get, you know, more clever ways of preserving the species.
Yeah, they are.
But the fact that we have to go to those lengths is, again, that's the dark side of humanity, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, I've argued against big game hunting and things in the past online and in person, and I've been told that, no, you don't understand. These reservations, they make enormous amounts of money for the reservation, you know, the reserve for the local people, and they keep it monitored. But, you know, why does it have to be like that to begin with? you know, it's just there is a finite amount of these, you know, lions and things like that. Lions aren't as bad off as things like tigers and such, I understand, but still it is a problem. And
well, yeah, I don't like big game hunting like that. I know it's a big industry and it's lots of money and all that stuff like that. But if you take, you know, here in the United States, for example, hunters, well, I don't have a problem. I'm not a hunter. I hunt at the local market. So, you know, people hunt and so forth. And although I couldn't personally, it would be, honestly, it'd be easier for me to shoot a person than a deer. So, you know, but you have to realize too, there's game management. If you don't manage it and if you don't cull the herd, a certain percentage are going to die anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, in you know, as long as it's managed right, I don't have a problem with it.
I agree.
I don't disagree. So, yeah, but it makes me think also about whaling, which I think has gotten much better.
Oh, yeah,
we all know that.
I think they should totally outlaw whaling.
Oh, I completely agree. I mean, we all know that Star Trek IV saved the humpback whale, yeah, so we're very thankful for that.
I remember that one. Yeah.
But,
so before we run out of time, Dr. Jerry has a question for Dr. Mike. Do you believe the Bermuda Triangle exists with all the mysteries surrounding it?
Well, there. Yeah, actually, do I believe it exists? Yes, it does. It's an. It has a lot of anomalies that are quite weird. You have magnetic anomalies, you have, you know, supposedly, you know, methane problems, you have, yeah, is it exactly a triangle? Well, I mean, that's just the way they defined it. But a lot of very strange things have happened that they can't explain. And, I mean...
Is that the only place on Earth?
Oh no, there's several. There's several places that are called triangles. Alaska has one. You know, the triangle that you're talking about, the Bermuda Triangle. But there are several of them that are defined as triangles that have very odd things happen.
Well, and, Damien thinks that aliens live there.
where the Bermuda?
Yeah.
Why not? I mean, sure.
That's kind of what they're saying about the Alaska Triangle, too.
They got plenty of bases around.
Yeah, they, you know, it's kind of, but it has a lot of oddities that people can't explain.
A lot of it's weather.
But how ships can, I mean, we're talking huge ships, like that big iron ore, I can't remember the name of it. That just disappeared. And they haven't been able to find it.
So, other than, let's say, methane gas and other, what other kinds of energies have they been able to measure?
Well, magnetic anomalies. People get out there, and all of a sudden their compass will start spinning and doing all sorts of stuff. They get lost. The weather out there can crop up in an instant into a huge hurricane. So a lot of the things that have been, you know, missing out there, I would say probably as a result of weather being lost. But there,
I wonder if that could change with the jet stream changing.
Well, that's very probable. Now, the elevator current is another big issue.
What is that?
That's the elevator current is the one that runs around up through, comes off of Africa up through the Gulf up into, you know, the northern part. And it's probably the major ocean current.
Okay.
And right. Slowing down.
Oh.
If it stops, we have an instant ice age.
I think that was one of the premises of the Day After Tomorrow.
So,
Yeah. Do what?
How much is it slowed down that they can measure?
Well, I don't know the exact amount. Normally, it's, I think, 4 or 5 miles an hour. And I think it's down to 3 or something like that.
Wow. And that's within what period of time?
I couldn't tell you that.
Fun times.
Within the last 100 years that they
Sure. But, I mean, if it stops, you have an instant ice age all over again.
Yeah, yeah, we live in interesting times.
I still feel that if there weren't people like you to keep educating us, Dr. Mike, that because you know more than the average bloke, let's say.
Well, I've been fortunate. I've been around a lot of the, especially in the, you know, ocean scene. I've been around a lot of the real big time famous people. I've been out actually on the Calypso with the Jacques Cousteau and his crew. That was back in 1971. And I've been able to meet a lot of very well known folks associated with National Geographic and all that stuff like that. So, you know, I've been very fortunate when it comes to, a lot of the things I've been able to experience and delve into over the years.
Have you ever thought of writing your story and your journey?
No.
I think it'd be great.
Yeah.
I just like that direct response.
I'm not sure about that.
But I mean, it is an interesting story. I can't argue with that.
Interesting fact. A few weeks or a month or so ago, it was in the paper anyway, that there's a ship that's called the Flip.
Oh.
Did you read about that?
Mm-hmm. No.
Okay. Well, it's this like 500-foot long ship, and it's called Flip because it goes out into deep water and it fills itself full of water and it flips upright.
Mm-hmm.
So that you have an observatory about, you know, 200-300 feet under the water. And that was part of Scripps Institution of Oceanography in San Diego. And I had a friend of mine who was one of the technicians on that boat. And I had a chance to go out on it. It's kind of weird.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, there's a lot of history there.
Well, that is very, you got some great stories to tell. And I think we could fill a bunch of
that before.
You know, it's funny that you bring it up because I only learned about it, I think, last week or the week before, very recently. Uh-huh. But, you know, it was funny because it was a Instagram or something. And he basically showed a picture of the bathroom. And you have two different sinks in different angles, right?
Yeah.
Why would you need this? And he explained why and what it did and all that. It was very interesting.
Yeah. It was an interesting thing.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of that one. Yeah, I love it when I learn these things. Flip.
Yeah.
Well, this is the whole point of, you know, we're so fortunate to have such a vast array of people in our group here and those who mm-hmm. join and those who listen in the archives, because you're invaluable to us and we appreciate you very much for all that you can
share
and offer. Will you come back again and the next time we'll talk more about aliens and UFOs again?
Oh, that's fine. We can do that.
Any of the more recent sightings and, you know, disclosures, if there are any?
They happen all the time, but, you know, nothing that really piques my interest. Probably, if I had to sum it, we got 2 minutes, okay.
That's all right.
One of the, I don't know if you're familiar with a guy named John Dover. He's a retired Navajo Ranger.
Yes.
And he's been on aliens, ancient aliens. He's been on Skinwalker Ranch. And, you know, he's been around and seen a lot of really strange things. I was having dinner with him one night and he was talking. I told him, I said, well, I've never seen a spook, specter, ghost, goblin, UFO, or alien. I said, but I'm still looking. And in all seriousness, he looked at me, he said, be careful what you wish for.
No, I still want to. But
yeah.
But probably good advice. You know, I'm looking forward to having you back on because we have a limitless amount of topics we can discuss. We haven't even scratched the surface of the ocean and, you know, all the things we can get into on that. But, you know,
I got a funny story about lobsters we can talk about, too.
Hey, we're putting it on the agenda.
This is the point. The ocean is changing and we have to get with the program to help protect that ocean, even if we don't understand it.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's not just climate change. It's not just changing temperatures. It's also human activities of pollution, of overfishing, of, you know, a myriad amount of things.
Oh, yeah. It's not just one thing.
Yeah.
Climate change is not a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's been around for millions of years.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's cycling. You know, we go into an ice age, we come out of an ice age. We do this and that and the other. There have been times back in history where the CO2 levels were far greater than they are right now.
I think that was one of the extinction level events, actually.
Yeah, and it's kind of one of those things where it's not something that's new.
No.
But
you
what know, man has done is accelerated.
You know, exactly. What I've heard that's best about climate change, it's not going to detrimentally hurt the planet, per se. Earth is going to be fine. It's just going to make life harder on us, on our resources, on our, you know, our lives, our cities, things like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You know, we were talking about, and I know we're getting running out of time, but I'm just going to throw this in. It's interesting. Magnetic fields have come up in the chat too. They are looking at ancient trees that were around, you know, 50,000 years ago, and they think that's when the poles switched last.
Mm-hmm.
They also seem to think that the magnetic field protecting Earth was much weaker then, much mm-hmm. weaker. And there was a very interesting theory that is what drove a lot of humans inside caves, which led to a lot of cave paintings and things like that.
Well, they became good buddies with the reptile people.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah, no,
you just opened another door.
the last magnetic shift was 600,000 years ago.
Mm.
I think, and this is the, but you mentioned it there, we have accelerated the process and by our irresponsibility and I think greed.
Greed has a lot to do with it.
Oh, yeah. And I think willful ignorance. You know, when your paycheck is dependent on something, you're likely to believe whatever you need to keep that coming.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Dr. Mike. It's been the hour goes by so fast.
It does. And we have enjoyed having you on. It has been a wonderful conversation. But I would be remiss if we didn't do a little bit of housekeeping real quick before we wrap up.
Okay.
Next week, we are having Dr. Douglas Kelly join us. And,
oh, good.
Yeah, so looking forward to that. His topic is going to be not allowing fear to hold you back. So definitely please join us next week. I also had gotten an email from Dr. Rick Daleska. He has a very interesting idea on AI that he wants to go over and how it will impact human health. So we're going to have him on in the near future. I just was going over it this afternoon, got sidetracked. Actually, I haven't responded to him yet, but I'm going to, and we're going to see if I can't get him the week after. So, and then Dr. Mike, I think we're going to be seeing you, every month or two for the next year or two?
That's fine. I got lots of lies and stories I can tell.
I love it. I'm down for that.
Lots of good stuff coming up. And then, you know, we have some, wonderful folks. We're looking forward to having our guests on this year. I know, Wendy, you're coming back in, I think, the summer to do like a semi-year thing if we were talking about it. So it's good stuff. Good stuff all around. But it is that time of the evening tonight. So, Dr. Mike, want to give you the first option. Do you have any last thoughts you want to leave us with?
I can't really think of anything right offhand. Oh, my favorite critter is the octopus, by the way.
Oh, I love octopus.
That's a good one.
And it's kind of one of those things where a lot of people think they're alien.
I got for this one. Have you seen Resident Alien?
No.
Oh, that, there we go again. Time to close the show. But I want to say we could go on forever. You know, I've enjoyed tonight. Thanks, Dr. Mike. And I want to say, don't let them push you around out there, people. Stand your ground. You know, hang in there. Oh, things might feel a little tense out there, but just one foot in front of the other.
just remember, Christmas is coming soon.
Yes, it is.
and an octopus has 56 chromosomes.
Very interesting.
Come on.
Now,
sorry,
Dr. Vicky doesn't want to hear my truth, but Resident Alien, they have an they describe how the octopus is a cousin of this alien species.
Oh, yeah.
Very funny. but you know, I completely agree. I will say, humanity has been in rougher times, if you don't count nuclear annihilation or, you know, other possible things like that. But we've been in much rougher times. We're going to get through this, but you have to keep your head on a swivel, be smart, and do what you can to make the world a better place in little ways. So that's my two cents. But.
There we go.
All right. Well, thank you again, Dr. Mike. We have loved this conversation. I'm going to hold you to that coming back.
Okay.
And Dr. Vicky, couldn't do this without you. Thank you so much for everything that you do. And looking forward to having Dr. Douglas Kelly on next week. And until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.